The Beat Podcast is brought to you by Nutritia and is designed for healthcare professionals only. In this mini-series, we have partnered with Feel Good, human health and performance experts who transform science into practical, real-life solutions. You will hear from experts in psychology, nutrition, mental health, sleep, movement, and more. This podcast is all about you, whether that be on your lunch break, on your commute, or simply when you need to get moving. Take a moment for yourself and learn on the move.
In today's podcast, we will talk about how to have more influence at work, how to make sure your points get across and are considered. We are here today with Jill Williams, organizational psychologist, who has coached hundreds of leaders across all levels in making their voice heard at work. Welcome, Jill. What are two words that describe how are you feeling today?
Thanks for having me, Andrea. Really pleased to be here. Ooh, my two words for today, I would say I am feeling energized, but a little bit overwhelmed.
Interesting. Hopefully not to do with this podcast, and hopefully you'll feel a little bit better later in the day.
Definitely not to do with this podcast, and I'm sure the energy will help me work through that overwhelm and feel more on top of things shortly.
Yeah, hopefully in the next 20 minutes you'll feel the opposite.
Absolutely.
So let's then just dive in straight away. I remember picking up a famous book at some point about how to have more gravitas and be more persuasive. And interestingly enough, that book felt quite manipulative, actually. It offered tips on how maybe to make up a story or put people down to get your way. And I feel like sometimes we can see that in the workplace, survival of the one who has the loudest voice. So that means that sometimes, even though we are very confident in ourselves and impactful in the way we communicate with some people, for example, our patients, there are other cases when our voice is not heard at all. For example, when we negotiate with colleagues or managers or other work stakeholders. And especially if they are not listening, if they're in a hurry or without realizing using those old methods of influence. So, Jill, how can we build more influence at work with these internal stakeholders rather than patients without adapting to a dysfunctional way of working or becoming something that we are not?
Great question. And I absolutely agree with your interpretation there. I think what I've seen over my career is that so much of sort of the old world of influence and assertiveness and having your voice heard actually comes from what was the sort of the dominant cultural norms over the last couple of decades, which predominantly were masculine, not male, but I mean masculine in terms of energy. So how do I make sure my voice is heard, that my idea gets taken forward, that I convince people, that I help them see what's in it for them, but my idea is the one that moves forward. So it was very much about dominance over and almost assertiveness and influence as a form of force. Whereas that's not where we are now at all. In all organisations, actually, what we are now seeing is true influence, true soft power in organisations comes from having a focus on kind of what is our goal here? What is the positive outcome we're trying to reach? And what are the shared interests in that? So it's much more reciprocal. It's much more sort of human to human, and it's much more interconnected. So influence and assertiveness comes from a two-way conversation. You know, what works now isn't just to get your argument over as strongly as possible and convince everyone you're right, absolutely not. It's actually about listening just as much as you are proposing things. It's about setting aside your assumptions. Sometimes we get completely fixed on the outcome and instead being more present. I have a client I'm working with in coaching at the moment who, you know, has always been so focused on how do I position this, the rationale, make sure I get everyone bought in. And actually what that was doing was blinkering their views. And they were realizing actually if they focus on being really present, bringing their thoughts, their perspectives, absolutely their rationale, but asking more questions, seeking to understand the other person's perspective, they find they moved towards better solutions. They had a voice within them and they were sort of co-creating and shaping those. And I think for me, that's new world influence. That's the way in which we can really actually shape the best solutions in our work.
Yeah, that's a very interesting angle. So then how do you stay present and present your best self when it feels like you're still in an environment where other people are not, or maybe you're afraid to do that?
Yeah, great question. And I recognize for a lot of us, this creates an awful lot of anxiety, particularly if it is more senior stakeholders or people we don't know as well. The first is, I think, to really focus on the quality of the relationship. You know, what you're aiming to do in this sort of situation is build trust. You know, do people trust you as much as they trust the logic? There's some great research from Amy Cuddy, who's a psychologist, and some of her colleagues that shows actually people are more likely to invest in an idea or even a business, actually, if they trust you as an individual rather than just thinking it's a good idea. And that's what we want to be able to do. So to help you feel your best self, you actually need to set yourself up to be authentic. You know, make sure there's good congruence between what you say and what you do. Reconnect with your values. Remind yourself, you know, what are the two or three values that are most important to me? And how can I show up with those in this conversation? How can I show people what I stand for as well? But I also like to think about being our best self. I hate the phrase fake it till you make it, because that's actually really difficult to do, and that puts a whole host of other pressure on us. Instead, what we should be doing is tapping into a time where we felt we were our best self. So think about a time when you felt your most authentic, your most relaxed, your most confident. You know, when was that? Maybe it's when you're with your patients, when you're sure of your knowledge, when you feel like there's an equal power balance, that you're being listened to, you're listening to them. Maybe that's when you were most confident. Well, if you're in a situation where you don't feel as confident bringing your voice, maybe it's with some managers of the department, maybe it's with some other stakeholders elsewhere who you don't normally get exposed to. Take yourself back to that time. So don't fake it. Actively remember. Bring up the memory that's hiding in your mind and your body and connect with that. Visualize yourself when you feel at your best with the patients. How are you sitting? How are you standing? How are you interacting? How are you communicating? Bring that memory to life and then recreate it. So that can really, really help. But also, just remember that everybody is human, particularly people who are more senior than us. We have a tendency to think about them in relation to the hierarchical power structures, which absolutely do still exist in our organizations. And we forget that they're people too. So before you go into the interaction, if you're feeling particularly nervous about it, it's great to think about who they are as a whole person. What do you know about them? What can you find out about them? Maybe you don't know them at all, and that's part of the reason why you're feeling more nervous about this. Can you ask some people who know them well? What are their interests? What are they like? Can you look at their LinkedIn profile or any other information that's available through internal systems to get a bit of sense of who they are as a person? Once we see someone else has hobbies, interests, families, and so on, that actually helps us build that trust and connection and can reduce our feelings of anxiety as well.
But Jill, what about if it's a person that maybe we work with already for a long time, and we could say that that relationship is already a little bit damaged or there's friction there? So we can definitely bring our best self by thinking of a time when we felt more confident. But what if there's history in this relationship in which we feel like we're not assertive enough? Maybe someone much more extroverted than we are, that at the end of the day just drains us when we interact with them. So it's harder to maintain that best self, even though we start with a good attitude. How can we start over and press the refresh button in a way?
So the first and most important thing for the refresh button is compassion. You know, actually thinking compassionately towards the other person. How can you hold them in a place of compassion in your mind? And then use your emotional intelligence to adapt to the person in front of you. You need to also recognize what you're feeling when you're working with your emotional intelligence. But there's also some dynamics that you've talked about there, Andrea, that are about what's the role we play in relationships. And particularly with people who we've worked with for a long time or who we've known for a long time, thinking friends and family here, that we sometimes fall into a pattern between the two of us, or between multiple of us playing different roles. So a great way to look at this is actually through the lens of transactional analysis, which comes from the world of psychotherapy. And it shows that we have three states, three ego states we can be in: the parent, the child, or the adult. And depending on the interaction we're in, we move between these different states. And sometimes if we feel we have less of a voice and we're less assertive, we're in a child state. So we are looking to the other person for the answers. We're giving them more of the floor. They might be in the parent state and they're dominating and they're telling and they're quite comfortable stepping into that space. And the more they do that, the more we sink back, the more we become the helpless child. So it can be really helpful in that moment to spot that dynamic and think, okay, we've been acting as parent and child for so long. I'm choosing at this point to move into an adult state. If this is an adult-to-adult interaction, how am I going to show up that's different? How can I find my voice and bring that a little bit more? And that might be, you know, you mentioned actually maybe they're more extroverted than you, absolutely. So it might be to move into an adult-to-adult conversation. You need to set yourself some small personal challenges. Actually, with this person that I find it hard to find that adult voice, I'm going to set myself the challenge of making sure I assert myself three times more than often in that conversation. Or maybe even just start with one. You know, but also think about, well, why does my voice hold value here? What's the unique perspective I bring that maybe they don't see? That will give you, that will bolster your energy and your confidence to do something about it. And I really encourage any introverts who are listening to remember that often the less you talk, the more credible you are. When you don't speak up as often, when you do, people will know it will be meaningful. So they really, really listen rather than those of us who are very talkative and we talk loads, sometimes things can get lost within that. So remember, you are bringing a unique voice.
Yeah. That's also such a good idea. I definitely remember a time when maybe I was in a group with people who are much more extroverted than me and they were talking and bringing ideas. And I found it very, very hard to stop the conversation and make my point come across, even though it was a very valuable point. And what really helped was to take a moment and realize it's really not about me. It's not that they don't want to hear my perspective or consider what I have to say. It's just, in a way, how they are used to operate. So you sometimes just have to, you know, cut them and make your point. I know, raise your hand. Tell them, ask, can I have a moment to express this point, this opinion? But first of all, it's kind of dealing with that inner frustration when that happens, with that inner feeling of maybe being drained or tired of this, here we go again. And actually just thinking about, okay, what's the goal here? What do you wanna, what's the end goal for all of us? And coming back to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you're clear on your goal, what's the positive outcome I'm seeking for? Why am I doing this? That will encourage you to overcome that feeling of insecurity or frustration, as you say. And then there's polite ways to interrupt as well. You know, we often feel, oh, I don't want to interrupt someone. That shows I'm not valuing their opinion. If you do need to, and there is someone who really dominates the conversation, say in a team meeting regularly, you know, just make it explicit and say, I'm really sorry for interrupting you, Jill, but something you just said really sparked an idea in me and I wanted to share this. You know, so acknowledge it. Don't just cut in and cut across them, but actually acknowledge that interruption and apologize and connect what you're saying to what they're saying. I also find I definitely feel less confident when it's very senior groups. If there's lots of senior leaders and there's multiple of them, I find it quite hard to sometimes find my voice there, which may surprise you, Andrea, because you know I often do have a voice. Yeah. Something that I find really helpful is actually if there's other colleagues on the call or a line manager or someone is actually enlisting their support. So saying to a colleague beforehand, you know, this is the type of group I struggle to find my voice in. I'd love your help and what my colleagues sometimes do is they bring in my voice. So they say, well, Jill, what do you think on this? If they notice I haven't contributed yet. So if there's people you trust, ask them to invite your voice in as well, particularly if they're more extroverted and they have the floor or they have a lot of sort of social capital or informal power in the group and therefore people listen to them, then ask them to invite your voice in as well.
Yeah, are there other tips that you have for influencing, especially senior stakeholders? Because, for example, I remember someone in my first workplace teaching me about workplace politics. So how do you start? Initially, the first time I heard it, actually, I was like, oh, my God, a man trying to make me act in a way that I don't want to. But then I found out it's actually really, really useful. If you, as you mentioned earlier, if you make people feel included and listened, they're much more likely to listen and include you. So do you have any very practical day-to-day, maybe wordings or other tips we can do to build that influence around us and build our voice in a confident way?
Yeah, absolutely. So thinking specifically about what you said there about workplace politics, if you're like me and you love watching shows like Succession or The House of Cards, you know, politics is really displayed as very toxic politics on these TV shows and in lots of books and films as well. And sometimes in toxic environments, they are. And it's about people with their self-interest trying to navigate it. But actually, in majority of organisations that I work with, what we see is politics playing out in a much healthier way. Mm-hmm. You know, politics, there's a reframe here. They're not always negative. It's actually how social tribes work, social processes. That's how societies form and make decisions. And actually, we need politics to help us organize, self-organize as groups. And that plays out at a large scale in organizations. So to be able to really use and work with these politics to influence, say, senior stakeholders who you don't know so well or other people, there's a few things to do. One is, first of all, understand these social processes. So start to get into observation mode. How do decisions get made around here? By whom? Is it formal or informal? You know, where does the decision-making power lie? Who do they listen to as well? And that can really, really help. But also think about investing in your network. Often we wait until we need to have a conversation with someone till we start to bring them into our network or build that relationship. People who do this really, really well, they are constantly proactively building their network. They're reaching out, they're making new connections in a strong way, but a very genuine way. And they're building what we call social capital, that sort of social influence within an organization. But do it because you genuinely want to have a relationship with these people, not just because you think you might need them one day. That's back to old world. And influence in politics. So understand the social processes, understand where power lies. It isn't always just with those people at the top of the hierarchy whose voice gets heard. Get to know them, let them get to know you, the unique voice that you have, the unique perspective you have, and do that really proactively.
My question here is how long does that take? So I'm thinking if we work in a very fast pace, if we have to see clients after clients, and maybe some of these senior stakeholders are not necessarily people that we have many things in common. I feel like sometimes we may have that fear, like, oh, do I really have to build this relationship with this person? I don't really get along with that well, and we're both so busy, and maybe the person doesn't want either. So when, yeah, do you have any more tips in terms of, like, what's the minimum we can do to build a strong relationship and a network?
Yeah, so you asked how long. It takes a career. You know, I'm going to be honest about this. This isn't a start and stop. This isn't a I'm going to do it for this end. This is actually about recognizing that relationships are the most valuable currency you have in an organization often, and to have your voice heard. So it's about doing it on an incremental, ongoing basis. And in one sense, that makes it easier. So your question of what's the minimum we can do, if we're doing this progressively and regularly throughout our career, then that's going to build up incrementally over time, and we're going to expand our network over time. You don't need to build a super strong network overnight. Give yourself space, do it well, and it's more important that you do it in a way that feels like it works for you, that you can fit this in, that you can start to prioritize it, that you're enjoying the genuine connection rather than feeling like I have to do it. If it feels like I have to, you might want to start with a different part of the network and build relationships with other people. And what's interesting, I'm doing a lot of coaching with people on this at the moment, and they're saying, oh, you know, I really need more relationships in the beginning, thinking I just don't have time. And very quickly within sessions 2 and 3, they're saying, this is phenomenal. I'm enjoying it so much. I'm learning so much. I'm gaining so much from doing it. So sometimes we just have to take that first step, think about who we genuinely are interested in getting to know. And from there, do it incrementally and gradually rather than trying to cram it all in or do it all at once.
Yeah, and it can be quite simple in daily interactions. So I remember this one very powerful tip that you keep on mentioning, Jill, actually. So I'll let you describe it. But is, for example, when we talk with a colleague, instead of, it's about replying in an active, constructive way. So Jill, can you explain a little bit what this means and how can we use different ways of responding to build like healthier relationships and build our influence?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a choice when we respond on two different dimensions. One, are we active or are we passive? So that's one dimension. So active shows I'm listening to you. So I'd say, oh, Andrea, that's really interesting what you've said there. And passive is we actually just change the conversation and move on and talk about something else. And this interacts with the other dimension, which is sort of the constructive versus, I'm going to say, destructive. So constructive is positive. It shows I'm interested. Destructive is actually maybe undermines what the person's saying. So I might respond in a way that is active and destructive. So I'll say, well, Andrea, I disagree with what you've just said. And I bring it into a place of conflict. Whereas if it was an active, constructive response, I might say, Andrea, that's really interesting what you've just said there. I have a totally different perspective on it. So I'm struggling to understand why you see it that way. Can you share more of your thinking with me? So I'm still putting the fact that I disagree across, but it's positive and it's active. Whereas the passive responses might be, if you're passive and you're destructive, you're just basically ignoring someone. So you've shared something with me and then I'm like, oh, Andrea, by the way, I really need to work on this project. Could you help me with it? Totally divert the conversation. Yeah. Or destructive and active then is actually, you know, moving into conflict about something else perhaps. So it's great to keep in your mind, how do I respond to this in a way that is active and that is constructive? And this works in work, but it also works with family, friends, kids, all sorts as well.
This is something that I learned from you, Jill, and it makes such a huge difference. So I'm noticing when I collaborate with different team members, if ideas are shared, as soon as I start saying what I disagree with, you immediately make people reactive, make people want to defend themselves. And then, of course, it'll be harder to influence them. It's harder to get your point across. Whereas if you lift people up in an active, constructive way by saying, oh, I really understand your idea here, but I feel like should we explore a few other options as well? Or my idea is X, Y, and Z. And as you said, both at work and with our families, as soon as if we come home stressed and the first thing we do is start with what we don't like, I don't know, the bin not being taken out, it's going to create that conflict. But if we start with that 10% we agree and then bring a little bit of positivity to bring people up first, it's just going to change our interactions altogether. And I'm assuming going to help also to move from that parent to child mode that we way too often get into a more adult to adult position.
Absolutely. And I would say watch out for your energy and how you're feeling, because this really affects it. I notice I'm more likely to be in the less constructive responses or the more passive, the more tired I am. So it also links with actually looking after ourselves so that we can consciously choose the active constructive.
Exactly. But now I'm thinking, what if we're interacting with someone who simply doesn't listen? So we've been trying different ways to collaborate better with this person, but they don't listen. They instruct, they know better, or I don't know, what's the context there?
I'm laughing, a few people are coming to my mind. Not many though. So when someone simply doesn't listen, well, what not to do is kind of just keep repeating the same point again and again and again in the hope that you'll get through it. It just doesn't work. Instead, choose again, I mentioned this earlier, but to show up with your values. What are a couple of your core values that you can really show there? Maybe is it respect for them? Maybe it is. You have a core value around confidence and assertiveness and you're choosing to interrupt them. But also think about, you know, why are they not listening? Is it that they have a really fixed view? Is it that they're a really talkative person? Is it that actually your case hasn't been compelling? You know, have you helped them understand your perspective? You need to understand why they're not listening to then think about, well, how do I adapt here? How do I do something about it? If they've got a really fixed view, you ask much more questions that are really expansive to help them open their view. If they've got a really talkative personality, maybe that's where you interrupt the way we talked about earlier. If it's because your case hasn't been compelling, then think about, well, what else do they need to hear from me here? You know, have I not put enough both logic and the emotional argument forward? Have I not given them enough context on this? So you've got to understand why they're not listening. But also I find if someone really isn't listening and there's a real pattern, can you show them instead? Hearing about something secondhand and sometimes hearing rationale secondhand doesn't connect with people in the same way as experiencing it. So invite them in. You know, if you have something you want them to see in terms of how things are running in the department or what the work's like with patients, you know, find an appropriate way to invite them in so they can experience it firsthand and actually understand things through your eyes, and then they're listening in a whole different way.
Yeah, I guess that can be so valuable. Oftentimes we disagree with the things that we actually don't have enough information about. That's very valuable. And also I'm thinking maybe just taking the time to set up a conversation, if you're brave enough, to have an open conversation about how you collaborate, about how you work, saying things have changed, things maybe are more busy than usual. Why don't we think about how we prefer to communicate, what I need from you, what you need from me? You can position it in a very positive way. I'd like to make this work better. What is it about how we collaborate that you'd like more from me? and a conversation can go ahead from there.
Exactly. I think that's a great way, you know, really show them active listening within that, but share your honest views, your feedback, your preferences as well. I love that idea.
Yes, it's easier said than done. I acknowledge that.
Yeah, a little bit like giving the direct feedback sometimes is easier said than done. But if you do feel confident to do it and comfortable to do it and safe to do it, you can say to someone, actually, you know, when we were having that conversation yesterday, I just didn't feel like you were really paying attention and listening to what I was saying because you seemed distracted, you kept focusing on something else. Give them your perspective if you feel comfortable to, because that can help. Because sometimes people are so under pressure themselves, so busy being pulled in 10 directions, they don't realize that they're not actually actively listening. But do it with compassion, of course.
Yeah, do it with compassion. Do you have, I remember there was a structure on how to give this feedback with compassion, about not making it about the individual, but telling them the, okay, in situation X, so when things are busy and we're doing Y, so when things are busy at work and we're trying to get this project over the line, I'm noticing that sometimes you're acting in that particular way, which has this consequence. So more like situation, action, consequence, so we don't make it personal. Am I getting that structure right there, Jill?
Yeah, absolutely. It's called the SBI model, situation, behavior, impact. Mm-hmm. And I think what's really important is when you're describing the impact, actually, I'll take a step back. When you're describing the behavior, evidence-based behaviors, what have you seen? Describe what you've observed, not things about them and their personality or what they've been like. Actually, what have you observed them doing? And then with the impact, with the I, describe the impact on you. Be vulnerable, share how it's made you feel, but also share the impact on other people, on other colleagues, on patients, if there's been a knock-on effect, on the project, the work, the piece, the whatever it is, it's a focus. Share a broad range of impacts, but focus on the evidence. Don't describe personality or characteristics, and then get lots of impact, including your own view, how you felt.
And then maybe mentioning what would you like differently next time. Tell them, maybe they just don't know a different way of working, so they may need a little bit of your help.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the more open we can be with people, the more honest we can be, and the more vulnerable we are, the more trust grows. And that's the basis for really healthy relationships, for being listened to, and for also greater psychological safety, so you feel comfortable raising your voice.
Yeah, and then I have one last question before we go into a set of quickfire questions that are going to be much more punchy and to the point. And that's, what can you do at home, so not during the working day, to build that inner confidence, assertiveness, and the candor? So is there anything you can do to disconnect at home and work, outside of the work?
Yeah, outside work, I would actually say just at home, but also maybe a little bit in work as well, is find a safe space to practice. If you find that you're really not raising your voice, don't go and start with your most fearful situation or your most difficult stakeholder. Test this out, test out these techniques, try and bring more of your views in a safe space. That might be with friends and family members. So start sharing more honestly what you think with them before you try it out in work, as an example. So that can help. Also at home, what you can do is find things to do, hobbies, interests that actually allow you to build confidence in this space. So if you have an interest in the arts, sign up for some dramatic course or, you know, introduction to acting course or improv course, a different creative space that allows you to practice this. You know, if actually you're thinking, I'm not great at asking questions in meetings, or if there's a virtual meeting, sign up for webinars about topics that you're interested in personally and challenge yourself to ask the speaker a question so you can practice outside work, which is great. I also would encourage you to, use things like podcasts and books. There's lots of great resources out there that are available for people to support you in that, to work through it. But also talk about how you feel with people. You know, if there is a situation at work where you're feeling really anxious about having influence, bringing your voice, being assertive, is make sure that that's not all building up inside you. Talk to people in your personal life who you trust. Have you got a confidant that you can share what you're feeling? It helps you process it and reduce those anxieties.
Yeah, can I add something there, Jill? Just actually, I'm curious, is there a better way or maybe worse way to talk about this? And the example that I'm giving is many conversations that I had with my flatmate after she joined a workplace that wasn't necessarily the healthiest one. And I've seen that progression of, let's say you have a conflict at work, come home, and then you can get into this negative downward spiral of always complaining. and always being drained into that conflict or the things that are not going well. And then together we kind of made the plan on how can we talk about this differently so we won't get that much drained from it. Because I think it's important to have that, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 minutes after work, let it all out and then put it behind you. But are there any rules about how do you process this? How do you discuss this in a way that's not draining you at the end, but actually it helps you process and let go?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say a good rule of thumb to use with this is, are you talking about it in a way that you are reliving it, reactivating it, getting into all the detail, redescribing it, getting stuck in the story? That isn't healthy. What that does is it reactivates your stress response each and every time and you get into all the detail. So try to avoid that and instead question, am I talking about this in a way that I am reflecting on what I have felt, what I have experienced, what my learning is? You might need to bring in some details of the story, but it's about active reflection that allows the emotional processing and the learning to happen, not getting stuck in the story and reactivating your stress cycle. And actually, I was part of a panel yesterday, and there was someone who was speaking on the panel who is a fantastic leader from the rugby world. Mm-hmm. And he said what he does with his team is when they have a really difficult time, and they come together as a team and they talk about it, but then they use the acronym SUMO to help them process it and move on. I was like, well, what does SUMO mean? It, you know, bearing in mind this is the rugby world, it means shut up and move on. And I was like, okay. But what's really important in what he was saying yesterday is, but first we have a group space where we process how it's making us feel, what we've learned about it, we get that all out there, and then we get to acceptance and we shut up and we move on. And I think that's amazing. The difference. My rule of thumb is not reactivating the detail again and again. Process what you're feeling, what you've learned, and then move on.
Exactly. It's not going there and starting. This person did that and that and that and that and that and that and never stopping. It's about, as you mentioned, thinking about the experience, the feeling, the learning, and then sumo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, thank you, Harvey.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to use that with some friends. So good. So do you have anything else to add here, Jill, before we go into that quickfire set of questions?
Let's give the quickfire questions a go.
Perfect. So let's imagine that we have a boss, colleague, or stakeholder who's a complete nightmare. Sorry. What do we do?
Use your compassion. There's normally a reason why people are a nightmare. Normally it's stress related. I'm not saying everyone. Sometimes there are just difficult people. Absolutely. Use your compassion. If you feel comfortable to give them feedback in the way we discussed SBI, talk about how they're making you feel through their actions. Think about how you can adapt. What parts of you are they going to respond best to? You might need to adapt your style a little bit to them. And most importantly, as we were just talking about, process how you're feeling. You know, make sure that you've got a good support network. You've got practices to reduce stress in relation to this as well. But always try and keep that compassion in mind. It can feel hard and challenging at times, but it is, if we remember that everyone is a whole person, we've no idea what people are carrying and why that's coming through in difficult behaviors, it gives us the energy to adapt how we treat them and how we respond.
Amazing. Then your top two tips for moving from child to parent.
Moving from child to parent, spot it, first of all, and be okay with that. Don't be hard to yourself in that. And then once you've spotted it, think about, if I knew that I was safe and I had equal power in the situation, what is the thing I would say next? And just use that to help you find the adult voice within you.
That's really good. Then the top three tips on managing politics in the workplace in a healthy way.
So top three tips. So understand the processes, as we talked about earlier. So how do decisions get made? Who has the influence? Proactively invest in your network, build relationships, not just as I was saying, in terms of continually and over time, but be strategic within that as well. Think about who within the network is a broker to other parts of networks, who can introduce you to people, who are the highly connected people that by knowing them, you'll know lots of other people as well. And choose to be the person within the political system who puts shared interests first, not your own interests. Definitely been watching too much Succession.
Yeah, and now the last question, Jill. How do you recover after a tough work interaction?
Oh, great question. Active reflection is really important, and particularly focusing on what went well, what are you proud of? When we're in those tough interactions, we can feel really emotionally depleted. And we think, oh, I wish I'd said this, I wish I'd said that. And we activate some self-criticism and more negative emotion. Stop and pause, and first of all, even if it's only a little glimmer, what went well, what are you proud of there? Key learnings as well. There might be some things that you would want to do different as you move forward too. And treat yourself with self-compassion. And then do something that's going to re-energize you. You know, if we feel like, oh, that has left me depleted, go and do something, whether that's a hobby, an interest, going for a walk, playing a great song that you love, do something that brings some positivity back into your system.
Amazing. I feel like there are so many like really good tips in this podcast. I hope everyone who listened feels the same. I definitely learned something. Before we go, Jill, I'm curious, from your experience, what's the one tip that helped you the most in building that voice and influence and pure assertiveness?
Yeah, so it's a great question, because I do recognize that I have more of a voice now, and I'm more comfortable, confident and authentic in it than ever before. And I think it's a very easy thing to say, it comes with time and age. But actually, I think it was role modeling. I worked for some fantastic female leaders early on in my career, particularly towards the end of my late 20s, on the cusp of my 30s, who knew how to assert their voice, whether it was in a male-dominated environment or not, in a way that was clear, that was respected, that was authentic and had their true voice within it. And actually what I saw, it wasn't that I went to go and learn how to do it the way they did, but what I learned through observing them is how to connect who you are, to recognize what you bring is value, and to do it in a way that isn't about copying all the highly assertive, highly extroverted voices around you, because that wasn't ever going to be my style. And I think that's it. I saw different people do it in different ways. So look out for role models around you. They can be really, really inspiring.
This is such a good tip. I'm definitely thinking about you. Definitely are a role model for me. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And yeah, in terms of from my perspective, I think that it really helped me at some point realizing that no one is actually against me. Even people who don't listen, who get angry. It's really never about me. And taking that pressure off really helped me see things in a much more clearer way and be much more confident, even with making mistakes, not coming across the right way sometimes, and challenging people.
I love that. Absolutely. You're so right, Andrea. Yeah, no one's against you. Everyone's ultimately looking for good outcomes in the most part. And people are much more focused on themselves than they are on us as well, or the context. So I love that. And if I could add a third one to what we've both said, is practice as well, is the other thing that's helped me a lot. Just practice, practice, practice. And sometimes that feels really scary at the beginning, but the more you do it, the easier it becomes.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much, Jill, for being here today and sharing all your wisdom. I hope everyone managed to take at least practical tip, a practical insight. And if you did, please do share this with your colleagues, with your family, friends. And thank you very much for being here. Have a wonderful day ahead.
To keep up to date with future episodes of the Beat Podcast from Nutritia, make sure you subscribe on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts on. For more updates on the show, as well as lots of other educational content from Nutritia, sign up to our newsletter at www.nutritia.co.uk.